pledge drive, and we live in the poorest state in the United States. New Mexico is, has dropped since Susana Martinez to number 50 in money, in graduation rates, we're at the bottom of everything. And I still write letters that bring in over $100,000 before every pledge drive. I love when we can go on the air with the wind at our back at $100,000 or more. Because about 275 or 3. I mean, we've done more than 3. But yeah, we're a third of the way it's gone. Because it makes the programmers feel so good when they can go on the air and they know they don't have the whole burden on themselves. Because actually, you want to minimize the amount of time you're on the air. We do 1 week in the spring and 1 week in the fall, and I wish it was even less than that. Because who started pledge drives? Does anybody know? Was it NPR?
No,
it was Pacifica. It was community radio, because and they co-opted it. Okay, so let me tell you, I think honestly, I'm going to get more into this in the next one we do it finally with Ursula. I think we again have to come up with more creative ways to raise money and leave pledge drives behind. That's my honest opinion. So. Hone your writing skills, your storytelling skills. Try to do as much as you can in other ways. Here's another way. This is how KUNM went from 25,000 to 153,000 in annual vehicle donations.
Oh yeah, right. This is the car fund with the vehicle drive.
Yes.
We're both from. Well, no, Mary's from KUNM, and I was with KRZA and others, but I listen to KUNM pretty religiously, and the car drive is hysterical. It's a great way to get to raise money.
Do you do an on-air drive for cars?
No. Pun intended.
Oh. Yeah, right.
But it's a great campaign.
If you don't have a car donation program at your station, you're just missing a few opportunities.
Yeah,
you have more.
It's
more
than it's free to you, and they send you checks. And
oh, they're
going to be better than that.
She'll tell you about it. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
It's a really neat idea.
This is so important. We still need to us.
If you go with Car Donations Inc., Pacifica, and your Pacifica affiliate, you get a bump in the rate.
Yeah, Pacifica has a special deal with the Center for Car Donations. Is it called? No.
Yeah, Center for Car Donations.
Center for Car Donations in Bend, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to move up a little?
Man,
feels weird.
We set one up. We're not in the station yet. We set one up and we've got one donation so far.
Yeah.
Our local NPR does it as well.
That's okay.
We haven't publicized it yet. We got one there.
You can go toe to toe with
them. We're the gritty grassroots.
Follow these things. You'll go toe to toe with them. Okay.
And there's lots of ways to promote that.
We have many, many, many places in our city that do car donations. The public television station, the Casa Esperanza, and Give Hope a Ride. It's a place that helps cancer patients. Certainly, that's a worthy cause, right? But. But you have to air spots. Mm-hmm. You can't just
you do.
Just say, oh, we have a car donation program now. Let's get some money in the door. You rotate spots. I do two spots, two different scripts, and rotate them. And they are at least once in every show.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then in a 3-hour show, they're twice. So that way, if they listen to the entire show, which most people don't listen to an entire show anyway, but if they listen to the entire show, they don't hear the same message. And most of the time, I use humor. Sometimes I just do a straightforward one. Like once it started really building, I said, hey, you know, did you know that cars, just people giving old cars and trucks have eliminated a full pledge drive week? You know? I said, that's really amazing, you know. So if you have a car and you don't like pledge drives, you know, call in. So, you know, basically, I mean, it was stated a little better than that. But I give you some sample scripts on here, but I have many, many more because I do 24 of them a year.
There's enough of those?
So rotate the scripts, make sure they're on there. And if you have live reads and you just hope that your hosts are good at reading a live script, and cool. Just tell them, you know what? We might be able to eliminate a week of pledge drives if you read these.
Right.
Because sometimes there's resistance. But your air is your most golden thing you have. You have plenty of air. It doesn't cost you to run something. Okay, so if you, because you're going to pay for that electric and that all that stuff anyway. So put your car donation spots on there. And before I got there, we had one spot running, and it ran maybe three times a day, maybe five times a day, I don't remember. And it was the same spot all year long. And we got $25,000, okay? So I said there has to be a better way. And I saw it as a great growth thing. We also give memberships for a vehicle donation, which I think is really important. Because, I mean, if somebody sends you whatever your membership fee is, if you have one, if somebody sends you that much money, you're going to give them a membership. What? I mean, heck, if they give you a car. What have we had recently? We had somebody give an old Lincoln Continental that must have been as big as a battleship, and I'm sure even if it didn't run, the steel is worth a lot. I mean, that's huge. And so, you know, why not? I mean, that guy probably would not have written us a check for, you know, $2,000 or whatever it sold for, you know? So, yeah. And there's all sorts of other tips on there. I don't want to take up all the time because I'm not the only presenter today. But that's a really great revenue stream. Especially even if you're a startup station, because word gets around. And we don't just do on air. I put it at the end of my email. All the people in the development department at least do. Put it at the end of our email. You know, we donate your car. We give out bookmarks. That Center for Car Donation gives bookmarks. They give that to you too.
Yep.
And so when we go out to Golden Kirky, which is a world music festival or something, we always take the bookmarks and hand them out. And everywhere we go where we have a live presence, we hand out bookmarks. We put it in our program guide, a picture of, you know, a car. You know, you want to skip the hassle of selling this, you know, donate it. So,
Simon actually took a picture of a car that had blackberries growing over it right on the strip of scissors and used it in the ad, and they didn't even notice. It was funny. Yeah. Do you do media trades? You have like print ads?
Oh, yeah.
Trade for underwriting? We've used that as our print ad.
Right.
Mary, are you going to talk about underwriting, or is that?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Whatever you guys want to. I didn't talk about. There was one other. Let's see. Well, yes. Okay. So that kind of fits in with the air is golden, right?
Yep.
You have all this gold sitting there, and it's your free air. So one of the things too that I guess people get worried about is underwriting. And now Ursula is going to do a whole thing on the Pacifica underwriting, kind of going together for underwriting. But what we did was, when I first got to the station, we had, my predecessor had 17 pages of typed text that she would fax to people who were interested in underwriting. And I know from my brief stint in corporate America, where I really had to, I mean, I had to do it because I had a baby to support, you know? So I went into, but I learned a lot, and I could bring all those tricks into the what I really care about. Not tricks, but skills, I should say. Sounds sinister. But what I did was, I said, we really need a media kit. So I went to an ad agency, and I said, we'll give you a run of announcements on drive time if you will design us a media kit. And they took those 17 pages and completely reworked it into a media kit and condensed it and everything. And then, so we traded for the design of it. Then we had, for this first media kit, we had a printer who traded announcements on the air for the printing. We paid not a dime for this media kit, okay? Then, that's what I say, your air is your currency, you know? It's golden.
And then this time we traded and we finally updated our media kit. This was very old from the like 2000 or something. And we finally got a new one and we traded for this one as well. Okay, and we did not weren't able to trade for the entire printing, so we did a shorter print run. But they traded for part of the printing and then we had to pay $200. So you can just pass this around to see. Yeah, and most of the people, we don't have Monsanto on our air. We don't have, you know, the big bed, you know, partner. But we have, you know, the local co-op is our longest running underwriter, La Montanita Co-op in Albuquerque. We have, you know, Jim's Automotive, and, you know, we have a lot of local businesses, which I would prefer to encourage people to keep their money in town anyway, and not, you know, we don't have Walmart, we don't, I mean, NPR does, but we don't. But we don't have Walmart or any of that stuff, you know. So, you know, you don't have to sell your soul to, and you're still encouraging community when you talk about local family-owned businesses or privately-owned businesses. So, underwriting, yes. How do you value it? If you don't pay Radio Research Consortium for figures, and maybe some rural communities. When I was at KBNF in Paonia, the local GoTech school did a study to see how many people listened to our station, and they were amazed how many people listened in that rural area. At that time, it was covering a 6-county area. I don't know how far they're reaching now. But the other way you can do it, without spending all that money, is have your friends call other radio stations and get a media kit. Say, I'm thinking of running ads. How much does it cost? You know, and have them gather your material for you. Because obviously, if you call from your station and say, "Hey, I'm from KUNM and I'd like to know how much you charge," they're gonna say, "Great." So you know, it's have some people call, gather some information. And you can set your rates based on that. You know, just undercut them. And you can also listen to their people. You can listen to their, listen to their air and write down the names. Another good one is public television. They're already sold on public broadcasting, right? So you just go to them and say, "Hey, we're your public radio station. You should come to us. It will cost you only, you know, 1/10 of what it costs to run your announcement on there." You know, so that's pretty simple. But you know, use the NFCB handbook for underwriting. Use the listservs. You know, because you do not want to violate FCC regulations. Whatever you do not want to violate FCC regulations, because that is very, very expensive. And as for a small station, it can sink the station. Even if you win, you will pay $35,000 in legal fees to defend yourself. You know, we had a complaint against one of our announcements. It was $35,000 in legal fees, a $6,000 fine. It could have been hundreds of thousands. And I had to write a 13-page defense of what we were saying. We won, basically, but did we win? That was a lot of money.
That's a complaint generated process.
It was
correct. So you
yes.
had a complaint against an announcement.
Yes.
Was it by a competing business?
No, it was by an ex volunteer.
Mm. Ouch.
Yeah. So you know, he wasn't even mad at the station. He was mad at another volunteer who had hired him on the side to help him produce a show that he was planning to syndicate. And then he decided, oh, that wasn't really viable, so he fired him. So he was mad at him, so he filed a complaint against an announcement that ran on our air.
Community radio is personal, folks. It's personal.
Yeah. But, you know, but between business and nonprofit underwriting, we do take in close to, it's just under $500,000. Mm. So it's like $486,000.
For underwriting?
underwriting and nonprofit announcements.
Mm-hmm. You charge for nonprofit announcements?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That was in place when I got there. It's a lot cheaper than businesses, mm-hmm. and they run they're twice as long.
Twice as long an announcement?
Yeah. But most of it is from other departments in the university.
Okay.
A lot of it is, yeah. Right. And they have budgets for it, so.
So our station's not on the air yet, but uh-huh. of course we're going to have to start generating this money.
Uh-huh.
Can we value what our, we're not selling, what we're getting donated, whatever, however you call it. Would you call it selling? What do you call it?
The underwriting?
Well, yeah, the underwriting. Is it selling?
It's for the gaining. You do have
donation.
You do have to sell, yes.
Right.
But
well, what's the language?
It's they are supporting their underwriting the cost of the program.
Anyway, so during this process, so as we're brand new, we're probably not going to have as many listeners. Do we ask for less during that process, knowing that the next year it's going to be more? Do we just come out swinging with our whatever we deem to be our?
Well, you can't really just, because what they're really buying is your listeners.
Right.
So you can't justify very much. If you, yeah, know, you have five listeners, you know, when they get, even if you charge $5, that's $1 per listener, you know?
Right.
So you can't really justify that, you know?
Okay, so our first year or 6 months or whatever, what should, is there a plan?
What I would do is I would say, you know, if you just set them up on a monthly basis, just mm-hmm. say, give us $100 a month, and when we have very few listeners, we'll give you a lot of spots for that $100.
Okay.
And as our listenership grows, you'll get fewer spots.
Yeah.
I would just set them up on a monthly basis, so you have that constant monthly income.
Okay.
Just say, you know, come in, can you support us at a $50 a month level? You know, someday it'll be $50 a week. And if you get enough listeners, it'll be $50 a spot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's just...
yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
But you need to have an income flow. So I would just say, right now, for the first 6 months, we'll guarantee you X number of announcements per week for that $50 a month, for that $100 a month, for that $200 a month, whatever you... You can set different levels.
So
say, we're going to give you lots and lots when we first get started. The other thing that does is success breeds success. So if their competitors hear them, you know, if you get one attorney on the air, suddenly you have seven attorneys. Because everybody says, oh, well, they're on there, I better get on there. Same with jewelers. You know, it's the same with doctors. If you get one and they hear them, their competitors hear them, they're like, oh, well, so-and-so's on there. Because one thing business people are very fearful of wasting money on. They want to know they're investing money, that it's going to return to them. So when they hear another business on the air that's competing, they say, oh my goodness, I better get on there. That must work. That must be working for them. So they feel like they didn't make the first move. So your trick is to get that first person in any given field on there. And then the rest of them, you know, then you can run announcements. Hey, go public, you know?
Okay.
You can support this program.
Can I ask what your base spot rate is?
We have them as low as $15 each. And then they go all the way up to 50 in drive time, because that's where we have the most listeners.
Okay, so this is contrast with my situation as a small rural station that's not an NPR station.
Right.
We have an analogous situation to you with the station at Humboldt State University. Our NPR station has a bigger budget, the university supports them. We, in our office, we call that their sugar daddy. But so we charge 15 for our drive news time
uh-huh.
and 10 for music and public affairs.
Uh-huh.
And it's a whole different situation.
Yeah.
It's yes. So we kind of run the gamut between your small rural station that doesn't have that behind you or that kind of market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So our underwriting is based on a lot of local people who love the station.
Yeah. Right.
And then there are others who use it as advertising.
Right.
Like I have a guy up north calls me and says, well, I'll run that, you know, that message about my transmission shop. And I was like, okay. So he runs for a month at a time when he decides to.
Yeah.
He calls me and I put it on.
Yeah.
So,
can you, either one of you, speak to, so is there a better plan than trying to sell these spots right away for our first?
I think Mary's right. I think get them on the hook for a monthly amount.
Yeah.
And because that's how I do, you know, when I came into my job a couple of years ago, they had this quarterly rate was $210 for quarter, and I started breaking it down, and I was like, well, this isn't adding up, and we're not able, schedule was all filled out, and I was like, you know, we need to break this up a little bit. And so now they were like, you're rich, you're rich. I was like, well, yeah, and no, what can you spend?
Yeah.
And I work with each one according to their comfort level, just as if they were a member donor. Mm-hmm. And get as much as you can at a time and say, I'll bill you monthly if you like to be billed monthly, or I'll bill you quarterly, you know, however it works. But you're getting that money in on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Well, those are the kind you want to cover.
Yeah.
We do a lot of the same thing that commercial stations do, is like we'll bonus people a whole bunch.
Right.
You know, especially their first run. And I always tell them, use the saturation duration strategy, where when you first go on there, you've got spots all over the place,
right,
because you want that name to sink in, but then you want that longevity too. You don't want people to think you're a fly-by-night, you're here and gone. So then you keep a couple spots every week for the rest of, you know, the whole year. Because that way people think, oh, you're on there all the time.
Yeah.
You know.
And what about, I'm sorry, one more thing. Just as a startup, so you gave us the car idea. Is there anything else that might help until we can fill in with some of that? Any other recommendations for new stations?
Get your people to call their people to call their people.
What? Just the network, right?
Yeah.
Just market. Okay. Thanks.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, if you can start a sustainer program where people who are really invested in the station, but that's a whole different, you know.
Yeah.
We call ours the Radio Frequency Club, and they give anywhere from $5 a month and up. But, you know, right now we have a module on our database that automatically submits the money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, our membership person just goes in and says, you know, here you go, send it, and it's gone. So it's like 5 minutes a month. But, and we do $22,000 a month that way, $5 and up, a little over 22. When I first got there, it was $8,000 or $9,000 a month. And that was my first idea was, this could go up because people are used to paying their bills monthly. That's another reason you don't have to do as much in the pledge drive. If you get more people to just automatically have it moved from their checking account or their credit card to your account, that electronic funds transfer is, it's like wonderful. We used to have these huge influxes of money in the spring and fall, and hardly anything in the winter and summer. They were borrowing from the university. You know, because we aren't university funded, we raise our own money. But after we got, you know, first thing I said was, well, it's not scalable the way it is, so we can't grow it until we have the system in place so that it can has a capacity for that growth. So that I talked the general manager into investing in a EFT module for a database so we could just hit send and it went. So the main thing she's doing right now is like calling people if their credit card was declined to get a new number, things like that. It's much easier with checking accounts because people don't change checking accounts nearly as much as, but that whole Target thing, oh my goodness, it was a nightmare. She had to call these people.
Mary, I'm curious, like, as I'm looking around the room, I'm wondering how many of the people sitting here are not at the level that KUNM is, which reaches, I can be in Taos and hear KUNM. But for those of us that are little LPFMs with a 5.6 kilometer radius, we don't have that kind of infrastructure in terms of the ability to do that. So, I mean, what would you advise for people who are you know, starting LPFMs and, for, you know, and have maybe... My organization, they put the cart before the horse. We've got our license. We have the specs for the tower. We have everything. We have no money. They barely got me here. So for those of us that are sitting here in itty-bitty little community radio stations, we are not KUNM. We're not even KRZA, which... what are some of the things you might advise for smaller LPFMs whose radius isn't going to extend beyond what we stream? In terms of finding underwriting, because no one's going to drag cars to Warehouse 21 or to So what might you suggest for something like that?
No, you don't take the cards.
No, I know. I'm being facetious.
Well, I'd like to suggest something. I would suggest that you get in some parades and that you get some volunteers and pass out the bookmarks for car donations because we find at our station that there are people that haven't ever given us any money, but they'll give us a car. And I mean, that's 150, 500, 2,000 plus.
Yeah.
So if you could persuade people to donate a vehicle, and I'm not just talking about cars, I'm talking about trucks,
boats,
motorcycles,
lawn tractors, anything with an
four wheelers, jet skis. I mean, in Houston, we have a lot of four wheeler people out on their toys, and they're sitting in the garage, and you're helping them out. I want somebody to donate an RV.
WERU in Maine got given two Harleys.
Wow.
That their share of was $7,000 or $8,000.
But what I'm saying is go to the parade
and
pass out the bookmarks. And be constantly passing out the bookmarks and promote the vehicle donation program.
I guess what I'm talking about is pure underwriting. KRZA, we had day sponsors. They provided day sponsorships. And, you know, here we are, a community of 64,000 people. And to sit there and go, we're going to pass out bookmarks to undermine KUNM, no one's going to want to do that. I mean, that's the thing. It's because...
Were you that close?
Yeah, we're 45 minutes away. So I don't want to do that. I do not, you know. And so to me, it's about... Here's KUNM, the great, wonderful, but it's a behemoth. We don't want to go in that direction. I'm looking at for little LPFMs who have to exist within the confines of other larger markets.
Well,
what can we do?
I think that's an issue for that Ursula is trying to address with Pacifica affiliates, where you go together, and so the underwriters are buying a huge market.
Right.
Because they're buying your low-power FM and someone else's low-power FM and another small community station, KMUD, and they're buying, you know. So, but that then you're looking at somebody like maybe Stonyfield Farms or, you know, somebody who wants to reach the entire nation, and they could buy everybody's and then you get a share of that. I mean, I think that's a fantastic idea is doing co-ops like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, personally, if I was making the ultimate decisions at KUNM, I would want to do that with all the New Mexico stations.
Right.
So we could say, here, you can buy New Mexico.
Right.
So if somebody like National Public Broadcasting, which is like they buy for public radio, if they call us and say, hey, we have so-and-so and they want to, you know, it's like Kaplan University or something and they want to reach New Mexico, I could say, hey, you can buy just KUNM, but you can also buy from Truth or Consequences to Taos, you know, if you want, and it'll include X number more.
So Ursula's going to be talking about this at the Pacifica. Yes. That.
So, I love that. That's a beautiful, brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of on a related note, I don't know if you went over this yet, but do you know the data of how many listeners you get?
Yes,
yeah,
we do.
They
can afford to get
it. We pay Radio Research Consortium. You know, it's a 40-some-year-old station. So we pay them for that information, and they tell us how many people are listening. They break it down to the age groups, what zip codes, what radio stations we're sharing listeners with. You know, they give you, like, this really deep drillable information as well as the breadth of it. You know, it's really a wonderful thing. But if you don't have it, which we didn't have at KVNF when I sold there, it's like, or when I was the development director there and sold. I was the development department. But you know, we didn't, we didn't have that, but a local Votech school did a study. And so you might have some statistics class or something, some research class at a nearby university would be willing to do a study for you and find out how many listeners you probably have. Because they're good at like random samples and blah, 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 you know, all that stuff you need to have a really statistically viable study. Or just call up other radio stations and find out how much they charge and undercut them. And go to their, I mean, hey. You know, you're doing this for the community. It's like, this is your baby. This is, you know, you are providing a service that nobody else is providing. Quite frankly, you know, we're not just an NPR station. You know, we have NPR, much to my chagrin, but most of our days and evening is programmed by community volunteers. So we're a hybrid. Mm-hmm. It's a very unusual thing, and there are people trying to take it away from community and move it toward more NPR. And I'm like, no, I can't work here. But anyway. You know, and we also carry Democracy Now!, which is, you know, that's another thorn in people's side because we carry that.
Just a similar thing happened in Rochester where the university had a community college station and basically the public radio took it over. And now it's run by basically a PBS affiliate.
It's happening to all of them.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, UNM tried to do that in 1980s. And the listeners filed a class action lawsuit and said, when the last pledge drive happened, you said we were pledging for this programming, and now you're not delivering. That's breach of contract.
Right on.
And I love New Mexicans. We are so cool. Anyway. And so they were forced to put all these things by court order. They were forced to put in place that they cannot make program changes without having the most they can change a program is for 13 weeks. So if Bioneers gives us a set, we say, okay, we can run it for 13 weeks. That's it. Okay. And then it has to be open. It has to go before the Radio Advisory Board, which they don't really have teeth because, you know, it's the license is held by the university because it's not a true community station. But then they have to go through this long, long process and open it up for public comment, blah, 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 blah. So it's very difficult for them, the station manager and the program director right now, are trying to get the board to change that and say, well, we're just going to ignore the 1980s and we're gonna make it that you can change the programming as you will. Okay? But the board said, oh, no, 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 no. Okay? So now they're like, freaking out trying to figure out how to get it done. So I don't know if the university is going to sell the station or what, but I can only raise money for what I believe in. So if they change it that much, I will have to leave and say bye-bye to my retirement because I can't. I can't do it. My heart is in community radio. I couldn't sell a parka to an Inupiaq if I didn't believe in the parka. You know, so because I really believe you can only raise money for what you believe in. If otherwise, you're a prostitute. You know. I have to raise money for what I believe in. But when I believe in it, I can raise money 8 days a week. I just have to believe in it.
I just wanted to quickly touch base on the Lopar FM. We have a variety of stations in our within the 15-minute drive. It's WEF, which is a community radio station, Low Power FM, the public radio station, which is affiliated with U of I, and then Parkland, the community college, has a radio station. So you can get to all those within 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So one of the strategies I'm trying to use is a neighborhood approach, so that we radiate outside that. So we start with the businesses that are the closest to WEF, plus that gives us recognition of where we are, and then continue the radius of underwrite approaching further and further out from that.
That makes sense because we're located in the rail yard district on the plaza in Santa Fe. So we've already got, you know, the rail, we're like the voice of the rail yard is what they were trying to push. And I said, no, because this is a youth radio organization. We are not the voice of the rail yard. We are the voice of the youth. And anyway, but that's what I'm thinking too, is we've already got the built-in component there. But what I'm wondering, have any of you used Kickstarter, Indiegogo to get the... Yeah, and that's what we're looking at doing that as well. And I suggested, why aren't we looking at social media? So what are...
We're doing Indiegogo. We actually are launching on Wednesday.
Is it for a specific target, the equipment or...?
We haven't started yet. We're a low-power town. We're raising for equipment and also first-year fixed costs.
Yep. That's what we need to do. So you're using Indiegogo?
They raised $8,000 or $9,000 for just for studio, and they showed the outline and the design of the studio and their Kickstarter, and they got it.
We did a successful Kickstarter and a successful Indiegogo last year. This year we're going to be doing an Indiegogo around, I'm encouraging folks to get on at the same time as us because it's beneficial, and you know, maybe we can synergize that, but around Giving Tuesday, which is an event that Indiegogo, where they'll match your funds if your campaign's open during that Tuesday, Tuesday in November. But
did the gentleman ever come in who was supposed to talk about that?
No,
there was supposed to be a presenter who was going to go.
That's what I thought.
Did he ever come?
I don't know. If anybody's really interested in moving towards that, I do have a little bit of information on like some tactics that'll get your fund campaign to the front page, the way they host it. If you get a few of your donors ahead of time and have them pump the campaign as soon as it opens, that influx of funds to the campaign will get your project posted to the front page, where it's more likely to get hits that you're not, you know, unique hits. Also, like about the timeline, there's a whole bunch of information about the crowdsourcing out there.
Yeah, and that's I know that was supposed to be part of the discussion with crowdsourcing and whatnot, and that's why, again, like looking around and listening and going for the smaller affiliates who are just LPFMs who may just be trying to raise money for startup. I mean, we're in the same situation. We've been granted our license. We could even start streaming, but we have to raise a couple $1,000s at least to get the streaming equipment. So I've got a gentleman from Hutton Broadcasting who's doing that as training, but it's like, it's a youth organization, so it's like herding cats when it's a 12 to 24-year-old and you're trying to, like, so they're on it, but I'm looking at models of people that have done this successfully and how can KGZR Ground Zero borrow from that model.
When we applied for the 2007 my group is the Unitarian Universalists, and we made sure that everybody understood it was going to be a secular station.
Right.
There is a Unitarian Universalist funding program that the Unitarians have. It's up to like $20,000, I believe, for each category. There are four categories. Three of them are for Unitarian Universalist groups. There is a fourth one, which is for groups that are not Unitarian Universalists.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave a program in Kansas City on this. It's still available. They just write down UUFP, UU Funding Program. The Unitarians have Boku money, one of the richest religious groups in the world, besides the Jewish community. And they have a lot of people who give money and say, do nonprofits. You have to be a nonprofit. So, Unitarian Universalists, we got three different grants. They usually only do a follow-up. But for us, they gave us a third one. And that was how we got started.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of other possibilities. One of the things that, I'm sorry the gentleman didn't come, but we're going to do that. One of the things is look to who's involved with your station. If you haven't tapped them all out yet, if they own a business, you're talking about youth, but the youth has parents and grandparents.
Yeah.
You know, look at who's involved with your station from a deep place, a personal heart place, as a volunteer, as parents of a volunteer, whatever. Look at those people. Are there any business people among them? Are there any people who could do, you could go to them and say, could you give $5 a month? You don't have to have a database with a module. You can use places like EFT Corporation, where you just send them every month the names and the checking account numbers or the credit card numbers. There are EFT providers that you don't have to have, all the bells and whistles and the Cadillac, database. So check into that. Where you have your station's bank account may even have an EFT transfer. So all you have to do is get them to fill out a form that says, yes, I want to give $20 a month or I want to give $10 a month.
but I want to give $5 a month or whatever it is. And, you know, because that is a really good thing for, or for a one-time major gift, okay? The other thing is if you go to a business and they say, well, I can't really do $100 a month, but I can give you product. Right. If you want to use, you know, you want to use, you know, a couple free haircuts or, you know, a couple, they come to my yogurt shop and get a yogurt. What you do in the cases like that, you don't even have a pledge drive yet, right? So what you do is set up a one day, you can donate to us by PayPal, and you can either donate or you can just register your name, okay, because you don't want to violate any lottery laws, okay? And then you'll get in the drawing for all these prizes, okay? So just, and you know, you don't have to give, but we hope you will, because that's why these people donated this stuff, okay? And have a whole plethora of things, and you can put it on Facebook or whatever, put pictures, this is what all we have, you know, come on. You know, go to this link and give us money, okay? And then there, just go on the computer and Google random number generator. Mm-hmm. And assign each of those things a number. Just, you know, take their form and stamp it with one of those stampers that increase every time. Or you can just manually write 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then however many you get in, say you get 50 people, you put in, pick, you know, however many prizes you have. Pick five numbers between 1 and 50. Okay? You know, you would be amazed how much people will give because they have a chance of getting a prize, you know?
How do you get around the raffle or lottery kind of requirements?
You allow them to register without giving.
No purchase necessary.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to. No donation necessary.
Oh, okay.
We got a scooter place. They can't afford to underwrite, but they give us one scooter, usually in the spring.
Nice.
They give us a scooter. Of course, everybody loves it. That's how we get younger people to become members. Because they're like, oh, wow, I can win a scooter? Cool, I'll send in $20, you know?
Can you talk a bit about 50-50 raffles? Have you done anything with that? Our station did it, and they said that was not violating lottery laws, so I was 50-50 curious.
50-50 raffles. Well, I have not done that through K1M. I've done it through Common Bond, which is another organization that I am involved with.
And can you explain what that is? I'm not as articulate about what a 50-50 raffle is.
Oh, well, people buy a raffle ticket, and then you have to buy raffle tickets, so, you know, actual physical tickets, so you can write their name and address on, and each one's numbered. You give them half the ticket, you keep the other half.
And then the donation goes into a big pot. There's a money,
right.
A
and
money
then,
prize.
And then whoever wins gets the half the pot, and the station gets half the pot.
Right.
I would think you wouldn't get as much money that way, but I mean, we've done that at we did it at a live event.
That's what I was thinking. We're
yeah,
gonna
it doesn't
concert.
Really work, you know, just kind of in general. But
at a live event, when the concert, they have some free giveaways, but they're also selling their merchandise.
Right.
So we thought a 50-50 raffle because we're not charging more than $5 at the door, but if there's a way to get a little more money out of people, that 50-50 raffle might get us the money that's to cover our overhead and maybe make a little less.
And live events are a great way to get underwriting when you don't have air, okay? Because you can say, look, if you come to our live event, you can put up a booth, and that'll cost you X amount. If you want an ad in the program, that'll cost you X amount, okay? Or if you charge the vendors, you know, the vendors say you put a food booth there, they either pay you for the food booth or they give you a portion of the sales. So, you know, that's another way that you can raise money. Right now we have a raffle going on with an artist who gave us $20,000 painting. And he wanted the publicity and we wanted the money. So we're selling 10 tickets for $500, one for $89.90, which is our place on the dial, 89.9, two for $150, and we're having an event at the Jewish Community Center, and we're having an event up in Santa Fe at the Zia Diner, which they're just happy to get the publicity, so they're happy to open it up to us.
Yeah, the research shows that the rule of reciprocity works for most people. That's why advertising people, or that's why you get those calendars in the mail
You know, that's why you get those stamps that have your name and address, return address, reciprocity. Because when people are given something, they usually feel obligated to give something back. So your idea that you let them register for free and they're going to get something possibly for that, that's why that works. You need to keep that in mind whenever you're doing fundraising. The rule of reciprocity is ingrained in most Americans, at least.
Yeah, we do early bird prizes in with the mailing. If you ever do direct mail, this letter that I sent you, do not send just one letter. I don't care how well written it is. Direct mail must have a graphically designed full-color piece. Because some people will read a letter, and they don't want any hype. So they just will read the letter, especially older people. Some people say, I don't have time for this letter. They just tell me what it is. Let me
What's
see it right up front. Okay. So always include in your direct mail piece a letter. Well written. Write it like a story. Don't say, oh, send us money. It's that time of year again. Who cares? Everybody sends that. Send a story. Tell a story about something cool that happened during your startup. You know, about some really dedicated person who gave and why they gave so much. One of the years that we really got a lot of car donations was when this woman couldn't afford. I sent out a letter and she couldn't afford that year to send us any money. So she said, what can I give? I love KUNM so much. I'll give my mom's old Cadillac. She gave us a 64 Cadillac Eldorado. It was like a huge battleship. And it wasn't in the best shape, you know, but it's just the fact that it was her dead mother's and she used it for her daughter's wedding. You know, what we do best is tell stories. We're oral history, right? And that's the most ancient thing, as Sally said yesterday from NSW, is the human being sitting around a campfire telling stories. That's our primal human instinct. So tell that story, you know.
So did you tell the Cadillac story?
We did. We invited her in. Her name was Melanie Sanchez. And I said, Melanie, will you please come in and talk to us and let us record you? Yes. And so, well, we took her in a studio, and I got her comfortable because, you know, sometimes people get a little nervous going on the radio. So I just got her comfortable, and I said, tell us why you gave us your mom's Cadillac. I mean, that's really deep, right? You gave us your late mother's Cadillac. And she told us the story, and we condensed it into a one-minute thing and put it on the air. And that pledge drive, like, people couldn't call in fast enough. It was like, this woman gave her dead mother's Cadillac, hello? You know? Like, you know, why can't you give us $20? I mean, this is the kind of stuff that works. It's people give from their heart, and you cannot let go of that, you know?
So, you said something about letter. So you send out two letters on it, or you send a letter with that? Some
yes,
people read the letter, and some people read
it. Right.
You but send it's in the same envelope.
Every direct mail piece needs one. If you can't afford color, at least have it graphically designed. So it has pictures, and, you know, it's like very simply tells what's happening. I'll pass this around also. And you have a letter so that you capture both types of people. The visual people and the people who want to read.
If the letter is telling a story, what does the color piece tell? I mean, what are you trying to get across? How do you connect to somebody's heart through the letters?
Well, that is more, you know, these are the benefits of responding. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the prizes you're going to win, or you could win. In fact, on the envelope, I'll put a picture of the scooter, and it'll say, you know, 8 chances to win. See inside. And then the other 7 won't be a scooter. It'll be things that were donated by the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market. It'll be, you know, for the upcoming campaign, we have not a scooter. We have a Pimentel guitar, which is a handmade guitar by Pimentel Brothers in Albuquerque. And we have a beautiful table from a high-end kind of design shop, a furniture place. And then for, it's a small table though, so it's not going to change anybody's decor. and then we have a bunch of photography things from Kim Ju Photography.
So they're $500 photography packages. So they'll do a sitting and give you an 8x10 or 9x12.
And those prizes all donated?
Yes.
And that's publicity for those. They get
This is advertising for these businesses.
Yeah. Right, but it's not on the air, so it's not, you know.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's part of their incentive to participate. Yeah,
exactly.
Is that bottom half of that is advertising that scooter business.
Exactly.
Yeah. You get people walking in the door like, oh, I saw that. You know?
Yeah, you're going to get
so
9 miles.
It's a tax write-off, isn't it?
Yeah. Right, because they're donating to a draw. It's a tax write-off, it's advertising, yes.
I have a question about updating your membership, your nail mail addresses.
Uh-huh.
We had a direct mail, and we got a lot of those letters back saying the addresses were incorrect. And I'm wondering if there are some strategies that you can offer that are low cost, because we're paying those postage rates for getting that back. But how do we get an accurate address count? We're in a turnover town of college, Parkland Community College. So that's part of our problem. And so to spend a lot of money on full-color letters and things, which I think is a really good strategy, but our fraction here is... Yeah, we're fractioned in how we can even reach the people.
Do you collect email addresses?
We have some.
Mostly college email.
Well, they're not all college. We do get some emails, but as I look through the database, it's sporadic what the previous people who were entering information captured. So that's part of the problem. And then I've gotten some things back saying, I don't want any snail mail, only email me, or don't contact me at all.
Right.
And then how that's been entered in the database has also been spotty. So if we got a bad address, some people just put don't send them anything. And deleted the address, and then so I'm trying to piece together stuff from a variety of bad methods, and I'm wondering if there's something.
You have a legacy there, and garbage in, garbage out. So I would make sure at least going forward that you always have an email address.
Okay.
Always. And if they say, well, I don't want spam, just say we promise there will be no spam. You know, it will only be our monthly program guide, e-newsletter, or, special invitations. If Amy Goodman's coming to town and you donated during Democracy Now!, you're going to get an email from us inviting you to come.
As far as, there is software that you can run. You can clean your email, all your snail mail addresses.
Okay.
And they'll correct the ones they can or indicate that they... that the forwarding address or whatever has expired. They'll also give you the exact way the post office wants it to read.
So,
and they're not too much money.
So is that software compatible with... We use FileMaker Pro is what we're using to...
All you have to do is feed it a... just feed it a text file or an Excel file.
Okay.
You can give it to them. And the ones... There's several... they're not that much money.
Also,
you just have to look it up on the internet.
If you use a direct mail company, and some of them can actually tell you how to save money on what you're doing, they'll clean those for you. Usually they'll be free. But I don't know how many you're sending, but if you're sending 2,000 or more, usually it's very reasonable and it's well worth your money.
Especially being a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Nonprofit postage permit is definitely...
We have the nonprofit postage permit.
Yeah. That's what I've been using is the university's university mail. We have to send all our stuff to the university post office.
Oh.
So the university post office does that for us. They do a mail scrub. I think about twice a year.
I didn't hear who it was that does this for you.
Well, they're just different direct mail companies. I think even Vistaprint may do it.
If you look in the yellow pages under mail vendor, you'll get a list of...
Yeah, because there's a lot. Some specialize in nonprofit stuff, and they can actually help you save money.
Okay.
So it's worth the scrub.
I have one suggestion. I mean, if you don't have the money for direct campaigns, I mean, you can do hand-to-hand, door-to-door. This is some of the campaigns we do in Omaha. And we just link up with businesses. We actually charge the businesses to be on the back. We put coupons. They actually pay for the campaign. And we usually do a 10,000, or 5,000, or 10,000 flyer campaign. We target events where we know we get a lot of people. We also get cars at bars and put these on liquor store shelves, convenience store shelves. And so that's another way to get out to the general public.
What is it that you're asking them to do with on those flyers?
They do is put a coupon. One is $5, they just put a coupon. And then this one, I'll pass this around. The other one has local businesses. We got like six local businesses that's on there.
So do you use your volunteers to hand those out, or staff, or?
Volunteers, not good myself. You know, it's good. Oh. It's good for shape. You know, they're
advertising their fundraising. Okay.
So we advertise this, but also we're creating intra commerce. So we help the local businesses also generate commerce, and so it's a win-win. So we approach it that way.
We're not on the air, so we did a silent auction, and it was a lot of work, but we raised over $10,000 in one day. And it's a lot of work, you know, you might find a sugar daddy and give you $10,000 or something, but the point of this is your folks are going out to local businesses, and they're creating all these contacts with local businesses who are going to be your helpers and supporters down the road. And after we did this event, we pushed it really hard on Facebook. We showed the prizes we were getting and so on. It snowed the day we had the event. We almost called it off. And the place was packed. We couldn't hardly put people in there. And the day after that event, wherever I go, people say, "How's the radio station going? How's the radio station?" It's like we created a lot of community awareness. So all the work you put into it, you know, getting all these donations, a lot of artists, concerts, not just products, you know, use your imagination. People who you know are going to be interested in the radio station, and ask them to donate something.
Before we leave this topic entirely, I just want to be really clear. I'm still not, for some reason, wrapping my brain around how you can have giveaways and not run afoul of the FCC. I don't understand what you're saying. I mean, how is this stuff not a raffle if the FCC bureaucrat wants it to be a raffle?
Well, a silent auction is...
No, I'm not talking about a silent auction. I'm talking about you...
The prices to go out in the direct mail,
for example.
Because it's on the mail, not on the air? Do you support your letter on air?
We do. We say, watch your mail for... Mm-hmm. Yeah, watch your mail for the chance to win, and we always add that you do not need to donate to enter into the drawing.
So.
And during a pledge drive, they can call in and just say, "I just want to be in the drawing." Right. We had one person win who was not did not give us anything in all the years I've been doing this. And the reason I do this is to get new members. You know, I have strategies on how to get new members. You know, first, when I first came there, we did away with membership fees. You know, we didn't say that you had to give X amount to be a member. We just said every listener, any amount. Okay, so we built the membership that way. Every listener, any amount. Every listener, any amount. Just send anything you want. You know, it could be $5, it could be $5,000, whatever you want. Every listener, any amount, and you will be a member. Because we just wanted all those names in our database. Because you can always raise them later by offering something great, like is in this letter, you know, a KUNM one-of-a-kind pottery mug, you know, with the year on it, that which we got a potter to give us for cost.
Mary, what does membership get you at KUNM?
What membership gets you is the ability to vote for the board. It gets you the feeling when you listen that this is your station, you own it. It also gets you to come to some events for free. We show movies sometimes. We showed Intangible Asset Number 82. We showed Reclaiming Their Vote, the Native American Voice Vote in New Mexico. You know, we alternate between music and public affairs kind of movies. Food, ink, you know, that kind of stuff. We alternate and we take them around the, you know, we go sometimes in Albuquerque, sometimes Santa Fe, sometimes Taos, sometimes Las Vegas, Socorro. You know, we take them to different towns and show the movie. And usually the movie company will let us, you know, do it for free because we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Is there a minimum membership or is it in order to vote? For the board?
$20.
Yeah, the minimum.
Yeah.
Okay, there is a minimum. Okay.
To vote for the board, it's $20 a year.
So with that with that membership, are you, because they're going to free events, do they have a card? Do you give them a membership card or something visible that they can show at the movie house to get in for free?
No, what happens is we generally put, we have an email address called membersfree@kunm.org, and then they, if they want to come, they just send an email saying, you know, and we put a will call list there. And if they're not a member and they send to that, most people don't have the nerve to do that, but if they're not a member and they send to that, we say, oh, sorry, your membership expired, and you want to re-up right now? That'd be great.
Yeah, whenever we started out, and we had nothing, just an application, not a construction permit, nothing. Anybody who gave us money was called a founder. $5, I had one person who gave $5, you know, and I had people who gave, you know, $1,000 and more, but anybody who gave any amount of money was called a founder, and we said, you know, your name is going to go on the founders list. But now that once we got our construction permit, then we set a limit. If you want to be a founder, it has to be $200 or more, but we still take any membership, any amount of money.
Here's one of the free events. We just had a whole bunch of people who are volunteers. Some of them are artists, some of them are some of them are musicians, some of them are storytellers, some of them are, you know, have a full band, poets, improvisational theater people. These are all people who are on staff or paid or unpaid. So they're staff or volunteers. We put together a variety show, and one of them we called Freeform Live, which you have afternoon freeform, which is a music mix. And so, and then all of these people, of course, volunteered, and our members came and really enjoyed the fact that they got to meet a bunch of people who were on the air. It made our volunteers feel great because they got to showcase their talents to our members. And we had everything from a Cuban band to Native American drum troupe, you know, everything.
How many hours did it last?
It was 7 to 10. And this one was in Santa Fe at the Santa Fe Women's Club. There's also, we had it at the National Hispanic Cultural Center. We've had it at the Albuquerque Museum. They gave it to us for trade, for announcements.
Yeah. Can I ask a question about the free movie? So there's screening rights often that you have to pay. How do you get around the screening rights?
Oh, I just say, oh my goodness, we're going to mail out a postcard to all our members that invites them to come. We're going to have all these spots on the air, which would be worth X amount to you. You know, so you're getting a $10,000 package and you want us to give you money? Come on. We can sell the movies there for you, right? Oh. So this is like, yeah, you know.
Okay. We're doing you a favor.
And again, I'm using that golden airtime. That's our cash.
Yeah.
You know, my marketing budget is literally zero. But I have air. I have air, and I trade it like crazy. I trade it for restaurants, you know, restaurants, newspapers, magazines, venues. You know, I trade
beer.
It.
Beer.
Mm-hmm. Beer?
We have a beer trade.
I can't do that because we're at the restaurant.
So we sell beer at our events.
So here's, you know, and then we just do a little flyer. But you could sell, a sponsorship of that. You know, I could have gone to the co-op, for example, and said, "Hey, you want to do an ad on the back of here?" Especially, and in fact, they did sponsor Food Inc. when we showed that. Yeah. So you know, it's like,
how do you have strategies for reaching people who aren't connected? People who are who don't have email addresses, who are on the internet, but they're definitely your target audience. They're in your neighborhood. They're in your listening radius.
Go to public events. Definitely be out there in the community. Be involved in the community, and you know, go to public events. Set up a booth. You know, give them. You know, let them know about the station. Let them know that you're there, and. You know, maybe if you can get a business.
Give them your car donation bookmark.
Yeah, and if you have a business or an organization that will donate something, like maybe a membership to their organization, or you know, free admission to their something, and tickets to something, and or items that are visually grabbing, you know, and you can put them at the booth and put up a big sign that says, you know, you could win a prize. And they'll come over, and then, you know.
And then I take their donation then, because I can't, you know.
Yeah, you can take their donation or just let them enter their drawing. You can't force them to not come. Yes.
Can I make another suggestion? I run political campaigns, and it's just the philosophy of the curvy vacuum cleaner man. You just got to, once you know your territory, you just got to do a door-to-door campaign. And just pass out flyers and put leaflets in the doors. Can't put them in the mailboxes. But that's against federal law. But you put it in the doors and just run a geographic campaign around the curvature. That's one. And then you can also meet people at the same time.
And that's how that's
how we started. We got like 100,000 listeners. We just do community events. We'll go and knock on doors and leave flyers. This is how we just do it.
Carry tape with you. Sometimes there's absolutely no place to stick that flyer.
Right.
Just
right.
The best way is to slam the door.
You got to engage people. Yeah. I mean, because like I said, everybody knows it's not on email. Everybody's not technically knowledgeable. Advanced. My mom's 83, so you gotta plan for all the variants of age, knowledge. Like I said, people receive stuff where you can read. Some people, you gotta actually see it.
Neighborhood association.
We have one of our most successful shows during the fundraiser at KUNM is Train to Glory, which is a Sunday morning gospel show, and our host knows every single minister in every single church there. She knows their names. She knows their wives' names. She knows who the deacons are. She just makes it her business. And she says, oh, Sister so-and-so from this church just called in. Anybody else from the Missionary Baptist Church? The phone's going nuts. She has the highest per hour calls of anybody. But she makes it her business to personally know all the different churches, all the different people. And she herself is a gospel singer. So she's great. She's fantastic. You know, like I said, it's amazing how many per listener, that's the highest call in of any. And it's you know.
I have just a real quick question. Can you just talk briefly about how you value the nonprofit announcements and whether there's any FCC regulations for that?
Yes, there are FCC regulations for nonprofits, but it's not nearly as strict as for businesses. So we make it twice as long and half as much money.
Great. So it's like $20 and 5 minutes? Or
no. It's 30 seconds.
Okay.
Where our business underwriting is 15.
Okay.
So NPR stations are going to everything the same. All the same length, all the same amount, and I'm getting pressure to do that at my station as well. But I think the nonprofits, you know, they need a lot more.
Do you have a public service announcement
program
as well?
We have a community calendar online where they can upload their own event, but we also, people can announce, you know, we let them flyer our DJ mailboxes, and also we used to have it in the program log, but they don't anymore. And what I do is we allocate, we can do a lot of trades also for nonprofits that truly can't afford it,
right.
Which I know there's many that can't. So if they can't, you know, if it's a big nonprofit like the UNM Foundation, you know, they can afford $9,000 a year or something.
No, they have a budget.
But if it's, you know, a little, like, say it's the Recuerda Cesar Chavez Committee, and they're going to put on a parade, they don't have the money. I know this, right? And they come to me and say, can we run spots? And I'll say, yeah, can we have a booth at your event? You know, sure. We'll just trade, straight up.
Yeah. So do you do the spots, or do they produce their own spots?
No, we produce our own.
We produce it.
Because we have to have
editorial control.
So we're sure we're meeting FCC regulations. But that's how I do it for the nonprofits that don't have money, is we just trade and we put a booth there, and our Raices Collective loves going out and meeting the people, and, you know.
I have a question. I had an idea for this.
just like to spitball it with the rest of you to see if it's not worth it or maybe it's the best idea in the world. I doubt it. But underwriting in our, you know, in our poor and underserved communities, is there any way to sort of, you know, scale it for the really small and, you know, not nonprofits, but really small and really poor, yeah, like your corner bodega?
You could do.
We've never advertised before because it's just all out of their reach. What's that?
Give them like 2-for-1 late night sponsor. Throw in extra spots at times that you're not heavily scheduled.
Or you could have a graduated rate sheet.
That's what I was wondering.
You know, if you're
scaling
if
it,
you're,
scaling
you're,
it with, particularly with the eye, not to get the huge wins per se, but to get down to where you're actually helping these people out.
Right. If your revenue is, say, you know, if you make less than $1 million a year, budget is your entire revenue for the year is less than $1 million in your business, you know, you probably don't have that much to do. There's, you know,
oh yeah,
say
I'm even kind of considering the guy who mows lawns, you know.
Oh, yeah. I see. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't do a tiered, just like when, you know, when you, there's some places that will charge you that way. You know, if you go in as a customer and you're, you know, for like acupuncture or something, there's some places that have a graduated system based on your income.
The YMCA. The YMCA does that. That could be a model to look at.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, there's no reason. See, you know, nobody, the FCC doesn't set your rate.
Right.
You know, so you could, yeah, of course you could do that. That's a wonderful idea, actually.
Neighborhood discounts or small business discounts.
Like one of those truck restaurants, you know, food trucks, they call them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, somebody like that, yeah. We had, who did we have that we did a small thing like that was, it was a Native American couple who did, they did their own, they did their own dried beef,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Roadside, sort of.
Thing. Yeah, they would come to in front of the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center like every Friday or something. Yeah, we did a gave them a special deal, mm-hmm. And they only wanted to be on the Native programs, you know. So.
Right.
Someone in our community came up with a good idea, which kind of in its infancy, but I hadn't heard of it before. But what they did was they went to several restaurant owners, all local, but some of them had several locations. And it's kind of like an alternative to advertising. So they took three nonprofit groups, and there's a poster at the counter. And if you mention those groups when you pay your bill, those groups get some money back. But what's in it for the businesses? Those three groups are actively promoting those businesses, like on Facebook and through their whatever contact list they've got. And they're saying, hey, go to this restaurant, buy food there, and don't forget to mention us. And the three groups, actual nonprofits. So there's about, I think, 9 nonprofit groups at 3 different restaurants who have agreed to do this around town. I don't know what the end result is as far as actually cashing in, but it's like an alternative to advertising that benefits, you know, the local community.
Yeah, we had something similar to that. I used to work at a bookstore for profit, and we would, you know, it was a win-win-win, basically. We would have a given school, like, go down to Grader's, an ice cream shop in town, on a given night, and like 10% of all the money they got for those hours went right back to the school. So the school, just without doing anything but helping get the word around, you know, benefits from getting free cash. The business obviously gets business gone to gets a lot more customers that night. Hopefully, a lot of new ones. And yeah, it's total.
And the school has access to every damn family in the town.
Exactly. Yeah,
they
just
that little notice inside the Friday papers that go home.
Yeah, we have a social justice fair once a year where we bring in a speaker like David Barsamian or Nate Goodman or whatever. We bring in a speaker, or we have a movie that's really ripping about, you know, some social justice issue. And then we invite all the nonprofits to come and set up a booth for free. The nonprofits who work with us, even if they just put a PSA in our community calendar, they're welcome to come, but the only thing they have to do is promise us that they will send out to all of their members, you know, in their email that they're going to be there, and that they have to bring something to give away, you know, even if it's a button or, you know, bumper sticker or whatever, and then they can sign up as many people as they want and all that kind of stuff, and that's really been a successful thing for us as well. That's the other thing our members can come to for free, but if you're not a member, you have to pay to get in.
One of the things we did, this is when I was working for another nonprofit, is we ran out of money at the end of the camp. We had all these, like, 200 campers. So we had a pizza contest among all the, like, the 5, 6, 10, and they all donated pizza. And then we had the kids. So then the one that won it, they voted, and the establishment got a plaque that said Rochester Kids Approved. Pizza or something, and they were like, pizza places were, you know, that won it were really happy, and the other ones were just fine with, you know, not no knowing really about the event. But you can see how that kind of contest or competition could be applied to ice cream, or you could host some type of competition among businesses and raise funds or publicity that way for your station and for the business, for the local business.
Did you say people paid admission to come to that?
No, this was just kids were already there. The community, you know, like the camp was already kind of there.
How did the fundraising?
It was just basically we got pizza, you know. But okay. You can see how that idea could be applied to fundraising.
Yeah. The radio station sponsored the competition?
This was a different nonprofit, not related to
okay.
radio. But you can see how a radio station could sponsor something. Like that.
So all the kids clamored to that event?
Kids were already there at the camp.
Oh.
Yeah. But you can see how kids could clamor to an event like that.
Or even adults.
But it would be
all you can eat pizza, but, you know, come and see which one, you know. $10 for all you can eat.
Somebody was asking about how to reach people, and I have two flyers. One is what we pass out at MLK Parade, and on one side it has an MLK quote, which I think is kind of like a collectible because we change it every year. And then on the other side is public affairs programming that might be of interest. And then the other one is something that we pass out at the Art Car Parade, and it's three quotes. One is a Robert McChesney, one is
Albert Einstein's
theory of radio, and then the other one is a Little Richard quote. That's how radio works. And then on the other side are some of kind of a mix of our programming, which is one way to reach people if you are even not on the air. And you can get
are you guys all tabling, all of you that aren't on air or raising money, are you tabling at events in your areas? And
you give out these are pretty inexpensive magnets with your program grid on it. And then it has our website on the bottom, so if you live stream, this is great. You know, that if you're going to a big festival or concert or parade or something. And these are very inexpensive.
Keep it on the fridge.
I don't have enough for each person I have written up, I'm sorry. But
I'd just like to give a word of warning about tabling and getting the word out about your organization. We started doing a lot of tables at community events. Parades were great for us to get the word out about our internet radio station, soon to be LPFM. But then we got in a situation where different events, like a local Old Louisville Spring Fest, invited us to do a stage at their event and stuff like that, which was great and was a lot of fun. And we programmed the stage, huge publicity for us. We broadcast the whole thing online. That was wonderful, and we did that for free for the publicity of it all and just to give the bands the opportunity. It was a huge amount of work, but that was very successful for us just to get the word out about our station. But then we were approached by the Department of Agriculture to do a stage at the Kentucky State Fair, and we figured that would be, you know, a fantastic way to get the word out about our station to the wider, you know, Kentucky area, whatever. And we worked really hard around the clock to plan this stage. Again, we were just doing it to get the publicity. And basically, we worked all summer on that. And 6 days before the fair, the
state contacted me and said there was a state contract with a national talent agency, and only that national talent agency was able to program stages at the Kentucky State Fair. Mm-hmm. And so 21 bands, multiple DJs, celebrity DJs, and so 6 days before the fair, they approached us. Yes. Yeah, same people who approached us told us 6 days.
So anybody who approaches you ever, make sure they know what the hell.
Yes, exactly. Make sure you're talking to the right person. I would recommend getting contracts, even if you're doing something pro bono. You're exerting a lot of energy. We had a lot of printing costs that we lost and all that kind of thing. So
even if not a contract, a memorandum of understanding.
Yes.
Sometimes people will do that.
Yeah, so I definitely encourage the tabling and the parades, but if you get into something where you're investing a lot of labor in something that's only going to get you publicity, just make sure it's all legit. But then on a positive note, I think the LPFMs, we're in a great position to fundraise because I think this is a really good time. People are excited to be on the ground floor with something. They're excited to be founding members. We give people who have given us prior to getting on the air, we're calling them founding members. And they can maintain that founding member status for the duration of a lifetime if they continue to, you know, if they continuously give. If that lapses, they lose their founding member designation. But people are excited, I think. I mean, I think they really want to be involved with something that's new and happening. So I think that there's a lot of fundraising opportunities.
And I think we do need to distinguish ourselves from computer algorithm generated music like Pandora and Rhapsody and all of that. And that is such a plus because people are kind of, you know, they go in that direction, but then you can pull them back by saying, you know, this is human curated. You know, this is an art form that you are hearing an audio collage that an artist has put together for you. You know, like I said, human curated. This is not, you know, you learn about the genre, you learn about, you know, you're educated as well as entertained, and you are being kept company by a real live human being. It's so much of a different experience than Spotify or Pandora, a Rhapsody, or even satellite radio.
Your word art is my segue because I've raised all my money for My Little Power with t-shirt sales, basically. Mm-hmm. We're like doing pretty well with that. And I'm wearing Raven Radio from Sitka. They make like $30,000 a year on their swag. It's a really good design, and they have it in a lot of ways. And are other people swag? Yeah, it really is working for me. I've raised, you know, like, my $8,000 that I have so far is really from never giving away a t-shirt. I had a local artist design something that is pretty good, and we silk screen them ourselves. Well, it's actually like a rubber stamping. I get the shirts at Value Village, plain ones. You know, I don't pay more than $3 a shirt, and we sell them for $20. So, are other people doing that? We go out to fairs. We wear them around. People really like them. They get in touch with me. I can hardly. Well, I don't have a. Yeah, I don't have a storefront. I don't have a place to put them. So they're just where we are. Yeah.
Well, you know, to respond to her, and then I was wanting to bring something else up. I've worked with a lot of bands through a lot of years, and for a lot of bands, selling shirts is a big part of how they make money. And one thing we've always noticed through the years is some people do it just to be nice, you know, like, oh, you seem like a nice guy, I'll just buy something to help you guys out. But when they have a really compelling design, all of a sudden people don't even like them, buy it, because it's like, that's really cool, I would want one of those. And you're offering something they don't find at the mall, they don't find online anywhere, because this is a one-of-a-kind item that you're offering them. And I know a lot of stations have gotten artists to design custom shirts, and they use that as a great tool to raise money. Change the subject a little bit. We're mostly a webcast right now, and we have our most popular show is Sunday nights, and these two guys do it. It's a power pop show, and they do a lot of giveaways to raise money. They're always like, you know, if you give this amount, we'll give you this CD. Give this amount, we'll do this. Now, one thing they've done that I kind of wonder we're gonna have to stop doing when we're just pretty much a webcast is if you give enough money. Like, if you give a couple $100, they let you come on the show and basically DJ their show for a week. That would that fly once we're on the air?
Not really, because it's pay to play.
That's what I was afraid of.
I mean, but you could give them a premium of what a day sponsorship. So in other words, what we do is we have a lot of people who say happy birthday to their sweetheart or their child or whatever, or graduation or anniversary. You know, there's even some memorial things of, you know, this is from today's day sponsor is Jane Doe of Tijeras, who is honoring her mother so-and-so who passed away on this day and that her was born on this day in 1911 or whatever, you know, so.
And they paid for that?
Well, it's, no, they gave us a donation at a certain level, and then we called them, we said, you can have this as your premium. Instead of something tangible,
oh, okay.
you can be a day sponsor, which means you can put a person, it can't be a business message, we can be a personal message, you know.
And then how often do you air it on that day?
I think we air it 5 times. Mm-hmm. One, we air it once in the morning, once like late morning, early afternoon, late afternoon, and then we can't put it in Democracy Now! Because there's, you know, not really a poll for that. But and then the evening music show.
And how much does that, do they have to pay for that?
For us, it's $360. $30 a month. I always speak in terms of money, because people don't think, you know, I say it when I train the DJs for pleasure, I say, quick, how much do you pay in mortgage for a year? You know, how much do you pay, you know, in rent for a year? And they're like, you know, and you don't think that way. You think monthly. So when you're on the air, don't be saying it's $360 for a day sponsorship. Say it's $30 a month. Nobody thinks $360. You know, nobody thinks an annual
premium. You're playing. Instead of a premium, they get something and it says, today's day sponsor is so-and-so and she wants to honor her mother who died.
$360
to play something several times on one day.
Right, it costs more than underwriting. But it's just like, you know, people feel like it's special. It's like they can give a gift to their husband who, that he wouldn't have that gift. I mean, he couldn't go buy that for himself.
I did it on my son's birthday. You know, 4 times during the day, they said, happy birthday to my son. You know, that sort of thing.
And people congratulate their child who just graduated from law school. Whatever, you know.
In our neighborhood, people use it to sponsor a nonprofit that they're.
Oh, yeah, you can do that as well.
So they'll say, oh, you know, calling attention to it, I'm in there.
A lot of I work for community TV, and a lot of our programming is questionably, you know, like, it's really, like, gritty. Some of it is obscene late at night, hip hop stuff. I mean,
no, it's indecent.
Decent. So I'm just saying, how do you get advertisers for that kind of, like, our product is like, I mean, Basquiat is kind of had a community TV station in New York. I don't know if you guys remember. I mean, how do you get, I mean, we have shows like that, like there where there's true artists pushing the boundaries. How do you get, like, businesses to buy into that, like,
I think you have to identify which businesses would want to have the audience that you have. Because they're not buying your station, they're buying your audience. So you look at what kind of businesses market to hip-hop or to whatever it is that's on there. What kind of audience is going to watch that? And then you say, okay, so who markets to them? Okay. You know? Listen to a hip-hop station for a while. Who markets to them? You know, talk to your DJs. Where do they buy things?
Okay.
Whatever they buy, you know, where do they buy it?
Okay.
And then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, because you always have to think that the businesses are not, they don't care about your station or they care about your audience. That's why they underwrite, because they want to talk to that audience.
Right.
We used to have the gas pipe.
Oh my God!
Every complaint, because it was, you know, it was.
What was it?
It was a paraphernalia shop.
It was.
But they wanted to be on the IRA show.
And then if you can get the business to play the show, like in their store, we've got a few stores that really like particular specialty shows that we have, and they'll play that show in their shop. And that's kind of a nice trade-off.
I got a quick question on just on advertising. I don't know if you like the subject, but also potential fundraiser. It's political season. We can run political ads, right?
That's a pretty
big no.
You can run underwriting for political candidates, but you have to be open to taking underwriting from all political candidates.
Oh yeah, I mean that's fine. I want to open up to everybody. I mean, so that
anyone who wants to pay.
It's not worth it.
Well, I have in my district, Chairman Lee Terry, he actually wrote the local community radio act, and so. I have some leverage in which...
I think you're much better off bringing them on as a public service and letting them explain what they believe about, you know, what they want to do when they're in office, what they believe on the issues, and also invite their opponent.
Okay.
It's problematic. Once you get into that sticky wicket, oh my goodness.
I like to challenge.
Yeah. I like to understand you're opening the door to every fringe person of every potential avenue. You have to now give them.
That's no problem. I mean,
and they probably have money. They have money.
That's no problem. I want to behave like God, so we want to include everyone. So I just want to know the rules.
The other problem
because
is
I'm going to do it.
You cannot advocate.
God doesn't take money for doing
you cannot advocate on a particular. That's one thing that the FCC is very strict about. You can't take money to for an advocacy announcement, and that's in a way sort of an advocacy.
The call to action is to support the person. So there's
you can't include any call. You can't include any platform.
You're talking
you
about
can't include anything other than thanks to Barack Obama for supporting KUNF.
By the act of talking about a candidate 3 months or 2 months or a month before the election, you have a call.
It's just too crazy.
Yeah, legally speaking, if you had already established yourself as a very open to all political offices forum. Come on down and talk sort of thing for free, obviously, all along, then election season itself wouldn't necessarily be any more dangerous.
Okay.
Any quid pro quo there, and you're just begging for trouble.
I am so happy when I get a call from a campaign that I'm able to say, according to station policy, we just don't do that. We just don't do it.
Because don't forget, most of them are going to lose. That's just the reality of the political process. And the losers are going to be angry, and they're going to take recourse any way they can. And if they think they have a case with the FCC, they'll file something, whether it sticks or not.
Yeah. The other thing is you can ask them to, call in during your pledge drive. And so their name can get announced on the air. We have congresspeople and all kinds of people donate during our pledge drive, and people will go on and say, we just got a pledge from...
The fact that it is a congressman, there's no problem with that.
Right. We just got a pledge from congressman, from legislator Senator so-and-so, and we just got a pledge from judge so-and-so, I mean, that's not... There's nothing wrong with that.
We did a live broadcast of a candidate debate.
That's what I was
And one of the candidates was smart enough to just give someone a check before they left so that we could say, and this candidate, which was the one that most of people were but it was a big service, and that I think is more the niche than making money on candidates, is to provide the service in that big county.
And then they can donate.
It was the only way that people who lived 3 hours away could hear that candidate speak.
Right.
Well, and it takes the candidates out of their station. So the problem with having them in the booth is that you can tell them to not say a call to action, but if you don't have a delay button, they'll just do it anyway. They'll just fit it in, and so then you're violating FCC, and you're in the awkward position of a live show. But if you sponsor a debate that's at another location, then you can advertise that and then have your intermingling with people there to gain money, but then you're not putting that into your station to violate FCC.
And you can sell the event and make money that way.
It's too difficult, man. We've got to I mean, honestly, to tell me what I need to take back to my chairman, who sits on the board, who is a decision maker, that can change these rules and make it easier. Because I want to compete against the giants. Get that. And those representatives represent us and put rules against us, good or bad. So if you guys, anyone have any advice, I have a meeting with my representative. I actually did a commercial for him as a person, not with my radio station. So I have, like I said, certain influences that hopefully we can dialogue, move forward on legislation, what we need to change. Just let me know what we need to change and make it easier.
It's federal legislation, dude.
That's fine, that's fine.
You have to become a commercial station. That's what you're talking about, is being a commercial station.
Well, I just need to know what rule we need to go after to change or in order to make it easier.
It's FCC regulations, but they're in the FCC regulations that apply to us are, I don't know what the law is, but all federal regulations have an actual statute that was enacted by Congress atop that gave the FCC or whatever other administration its power. Mm-hmm. And good luck.
This is why it's 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to start now. We better start then. Well, yeah, just keep going like you said.
I don't know.
I love your spirit.
Yeah, right?
But, yeah, we're
how many stations here have underwriting board names? Is somebody who knows the FCC?
What's that?
I'm curious to know how many stations represented here presently have underwriting.
And how many are currently on the air?
Yeah, really.
Right. Yeah. Most of us aren't on the air with an FM signal, so there's nothing to underwrite.
You actually have more latitude in many ways.
With the webcast, I know.
Yeah, because...
Oh, I told the guys when they're basically selling their airtime on Sunday nights, I'm like, I hope you realize once we go on the air, you can't do this stuff anymore.
Yeah. We can do anything, right?
Yeah, and you can also have, just even something, an announcement at the beginning of your live stream. It says this stream is made possible in part by so and so.
So whenever anybody clicks.
And you can also do block ads on your website. Display ads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you do those, Mary?
We don't at this time. But I don't know.
Are you just regulating the audio? Because we actually stream live video on our website. Can we do something for our website?
Yes. FCC only
the internet isn't the air.
Broadcast air.
Yeah, you can do whatever
just
you want. Over
the FM
they program. Only govern what's on the air.
Cool. Okay, I mean, there's always a world way to do
it. There you go. He's happy. He's so happy.
I love the way
he
sits.
How much do you spend on premiums? And how do you keep your premium costs?
Well, my premiums are one of the things that we do is we do not do a plethora of premiums, because the reason I can get 100,000 in the mail ahead of time is they don't think, oh, well, I'm not going to send this back yet because I might get something better if I wait until the children's hour, or if I wait until, the reggae show or whatever. Mm-hmm. So whenever people want to come at me with twosies and threesies, we want to give you X amount of CDs, I say, that's nice. We can put that in a silent auction. We can use that maybe as a prize, but we cannot use it as a premium. The premiums have to be consistent, for one thing, because that's what helps you to get your mail returned. And I'm very strict about that.
So do you offer those in the letter?
Hmm?
The same premiums you're going to offer in the non-air place by the
I keep it all consistent, yes. You're not going to get anything better if you wait. So don't wait, because you're not going to get anything better.
Right.
Okay? But the other thing I do is I just really look around for really inexpensive things so it doesn't cost the station much, because I think to people too, they want their money to go to mostly to the program. They don't want it to go to a bunch of tchotchkes mostly.
Well, do you have a business that offers like an unlimited number of X premiums?
When businesses call and say, we'd like to donate this for premiums, I say, are you prepared to donate like 1,500 of them in case that's how many people? What happened to tattoos?
Oh.
We get temporary
tattoos. You know, NPR was doing these temporary tattoos, and I contacted them and said, can we just get the shows that you actually need? What happened to them? It must have fallen out of my phone. Anyway, and they said, no, you have to take it all. And I said, well, that's crazy. And then I found out how much they were, and I'm like, that's really crazy. So I contacted, I went online and just researched who does tattoos in the United States, because I didn't want it done by slave labor in China. And I found like really inexpensive. You can get, you know, and I had a tattoo artist, and then a student at UNM designed one of them. And then I had a tattoo artist design the others, and the student did it because he was employed there through work study, which is wonderful if you're on a college. My God,
yeah.
Like $3 an hour, the government subsidizes the rest. But then this tattoo artist did a trade, you know, for an ad in our program guide, and she designed the other things. And there's one says KUNM Music, and one says KUNM News, and I know I brought them, but I can't find them. I know what they sell on the envelope or something.
So it's just a press-on tattoo.
Temporary tattoos.
Well,
it's fine. I think for all four was like $1. $4 or $5, I think it was $1.
So you paid $1. How much did they pay for the premium in order to get the tattoo?
At least 40.
At least $40.
And then you can stick them in with the thank you. Thank you. No. You don't have to, you know, no, pay for boxes and what have you.
And then how much, do you have bumper stickers? Always?
Yes. Well, what we did was we got decals, and on the back is a postcard that says thank you for donating to KUNM, blah, 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 and then you peel the decal off and stick it in your car window. But bumper stickers are cheaper. I mean, the bumper sticker on the back is a postcard, but that doubles as your thank you, plus they get a bumper postcard a bumper sticker or a decal. I'm always thinking of ways to save money. It's like, you know, I go into thrift stores and buy most of my clothes. I buy from thrift stores, and I look like I'm, you know, rich, but I'm not. I'm not rich at all.
You look great.
Thank you. But I just go into thrift stores and buy all the clothes, you know, nice clothes. It's amazing what Americans throw away. You know. So that, you know, that's, I have that same mentality when it comes to the premium.
We've been keeping down premium costs for our Indiegogo campaign by forming relationships with local businesses, creating pins, stickers, t-shirts, so local premium patches, you know, telling them on the idea of not having businesses donate and not doing underwriting, but the idea that we're going to be a sustainable organization and this is going to be a long-term relationship. And those are the places that musicians tend to work. So, you know, we have those relationships in the music community. They tell their bosses, who are probably into it too. We keep our costs down. We have relationships with framing stores, photo stores. So we have original artwork, matting and framing of that artwork for the campaign will be smaller because we have a years and years long relationship with that store. So just finding those local businesses that can support your cause, not necessarily monetarily.
You know, there's another thing too, that we have had printing done on your cars and your bumper stickers and et cetera, and we always make sure that you get the union bug. Make sure that if you're supportive of labor and unions, you need to ask for the union bug. You need to look for groups that are unionized and deal with them. That's my advice. That's what we do.
And I'll just add to that that cheaper is not always better. We got pens through Cafe Press that didn't write.
Oh,
we
yeah.
got, you know, really bad quality stuff that we didn't know. We thought we were saving money, and that makes a long-term bad relationship with people.
And you make something like a t-shirt, you want people to wear it.
Yeah.
So,
they pay the
advertising
money. My suggestion would be to use the MSTV listserv if you're on it. If you're not on it, get on it. Because you can always float it out there. Say, did anybody have a good experience with a particular particular premium provider, or can anybody say what, you know, what premium works well for them? Sometimes there's magazines that will give you subscriptions for a dollar, you know, so you can have a 1-year subscription to a magazine, like, you know, for a dollar. Like, you might want to check into that, you know, float it out there, say, is anybody hearing about some really great premiums?
I will recommend a fantastic internet button maker. Good prices, great personal service. Anybody needs buttons?
I have a bumper sticker machine, so if anybody wants a bumper, right.
And if anyone wants to find out about silent auctions, how to pull one off.
Mary.
What's your button?